Yeah, well, we are a young team. You know, let's not forget that. I know we played well. We got hot towards the end of the year, but it was a good wake-up call for a lot of guys, good first experience for a lot of guys to understand what it takes. And that's pretty much as I can say there. I think there was some game plan things maybe, but the game plan wasn't bad. Just didn't execute it to the level that we needed to. We were a little soft, a little slow, and it's not a team that you want to get behind the eight ball and let them start feeling good. So good part about it is, you know, it's first and four.
I trust Fred VanVleet, but it's tough to hear the game plan was good when you lose by 20 points. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. A terrific weekend for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not so much me, who paid exorbitant chicken prices to see no Austin Matthews, but I digress. A touch and go, but mixed results, I would say. Mixed results weekend for your Toronto Blue Jays, who take a couple of games from the Oakland Athletics, and a disastrous start for your Toronto Raptors, who get absolutely pummeled by Tyrese Maxey and the Philadelphia 76ers. Who knew that Philadelphia had the greatest player who ever lived, Tyrese Maxey? And boy, that Kyle Lowry rumor that will never die will now live in infamy in a kind of different way. Blake Murphy, where should we begin this morning?
How much time we got? 4 hours?
Yeah.
All right. Here's everything that went wrong on Saturday.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Obviously, that's a very bad game. They lose 131 to 111 to the Sixers in a game that's never really at any point particularly competitive. The A1 note from this one, though, as disappointing as that loss was, is Scotty Barnes gets hurt.
Of course.
And so game one of that series, I tweet out in the morning, the Raptors injury report has nobody on it. It is the first time all season that nobody is on the Raptors injury report.
Are you making this now about you, that it's your fault? Like, is yeah, no. Exactly. Like, is
no,
this what's happening here?
No, I tweet the injury report every game, no matter what's on it.
With that kind of...
That
sounds like a little bit of editorializing there, I got to tell you. And never in the history of the Raptors have they been this healthy, is what you wrote.
That's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that happens. And then we find out pregame that someone is a mystery questionable and they won't tell us who. Turns out after it's Gary Trent Jr. He's been very sick, non-COVID, and was iffy to go. And then Thad Young's thumb on his left hand gets so hyperextended, it's sticking out his right hand. It looks like he has seven fingers. He's doubtful for game two tonight. And then Scotty Barnes gets his foot stepped on by Joel Embiid, and it rolls in a really awkward-looking way. Scotty Barnes is grabbing his midfoot, which immediately all the doctors on Twitter are like, oh, it could be a bone thing or a foot thing. After imaging, it's only being called an ankle sprain. Of course, an ankle sprain could mean a ton of different things based on grade and location and things like that. They're all three of those guys are doubtful for tonight. Now, you can get past the Gary Trent Jr. or Thad Young injury, and you have no choice but to play around these in a playoff series anyway. But the big takeaway here for me is that so much of this playoffs was going to be about, well, can Scotty Barnes carry this over to a playoff series? Where is he at in terms of impacting winning and being ready for prime time? And it's so disappointing because Scotty Barnes brings so much joy to this team, and he's brought so much joy to the process of 82 games this year. But he was also their best player on Saturday before he got injured.
Okay, but before we look forward, I want to look back at what happened. Like, I want to kind of just reframe this. So Scotty does get hurt, and I feel awful about Scotty Barnes. And now losing Trent and having all these injuries stack up, it really does hurt them. But that game was a blowout with Scotty Barnes playing great.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of want to pump the brakes before we go look forward. Try to look at what happened here and see what happened. Because with all due respect to Scotty, he's the rookie of the year. But I don't think that this team's playoff chances were going to hinge on whether or not he was going to win or not. So let's dive into just sort of, you know, whether or not we changed our opinions based on what we saw. Because clearly our opinions are going to change based on if the Raptors are losing multiple players and multiple pieces.
Yeah.
But did we see something that we didn't expect outside of maybe, like, was this a story of a couple of guys getting hot? Or was this the story of quite frankly, Raptors media, ourselves included, completely underestimating yet again the differences between playoff and regular season basketball.
Well, I don't think it's unique to Raptors media, because look at who we had on. Like, we had Kevin O'Connor and Zach Lowe and Tim Bontemps, and they all came on.
Kevin O'Canada, your best friend Tim Bontemps, and Zach Lowe, who's got a Canadian wife? Okay, great.
And the Dartmouth connection, he kind of had to.
I was just going to say, like, it sounds like
picking
more
our guests
Raptors
carefully.
Media.
Look, we know where the trough is. We're trying to eat. A couple things happened in this game, and the big headline for me is that the Raptors, and I don't think it's just a hot shooting thing, because the Raptors shot 49% from the field and 40% on threes. The Raptors were red hot as well, and that is, like, that was a bottom tier defensive performance, not just by the Raptors standards, which are pretty lofty, but by anyone's standards. Philly shot 50% on threes and paraded to the free throw line. The bigger things, though, is you can't control, really, if another team gets hot. You can't control the whistle and things like that. What you can control, and the two things that the Raptors have controlled all season, can you force turnovers? Can you win the offensive rebounding battle? And they lost both of those dramatically. They forced only three turnovers by the 76ers, which is tied for an all-time playoff low for the Raptors. They only grabbed seven offensive rebounds, which is just not their identity and not their game plan. So they end up in a situation where Philly outshoots them at the free throw line, which is expected, but also just in terms of raw field goal attempts, Philly gets more too, because Toronto doesn't win the possession battle. And that, to me, is whatever you think of Maxi getting hot, the whistle on Embiid, that's an area Toronto has to win. That's their identity. You can't lose the identity parts of this series, because you just don't have the talent to make up the gap when you're not checking those boxes.
Ailish, did your opinion on the series change before the Scottie Barnes injury?
Well, it's hard to remove that. Like, I'm trying to think about how I felt for some of the game, and it's like, okay, he was doing really well, and I think your point about, well, is he going to be the one that drives this entire team throughout the playoffs? Well, that was maybe the hope I had, but my perspective now on the other side of it is that the Raptors have done this all year, a little bit less confident this time around without Scottie Barnes, but they've found ways to overcome situations like this. So I'm trying to see the positive, as I always do, that they can be that gritty team that finds a way to win. They've done that they had the best record against the best teams, but playoff basketball is different. I think we saw that post Scottie Barnes injury that, okay, like, we can't just think that the Raptors are going to roll their way through there as that gritty, scrappy team that's exceeded expectations all season. They're going to have to really dig deep with some rotation players that might not have had the biggest stints this time around. So a little bit more anxious, yes.
JD, to your point off the top when I brought up Barnes, he has 15, 10, and 8. He's going for the first triple-double in Raptors playoff history, and they've lost his minutes by 10 points. Like, even so, and this is, if there were a reason for optimism, it would be that, well, the Raptors played their worst possible defensive game. In their estimation, they got a really bad whistle, and they didn't execute any of their core stuff. If you want to be negative about it, it's that Pascal Siakam was really efficient, and you got about the best game you could hope for from a rookie, and you were still getting your teeth kicked in.
Smoke.
Even OG. Like, OG had 20, quietly. I know people thought Fred VanVleet didn't have a very good game, and in his words, he had one of his worst defensive performances. He had 18 points on 12 shots. This team was not, other than Gary Trent, not really struggling to find offense, and that's supposed to be the question mark for them. So at the same time, you could be optimistic that, well, things won't ever go this bad defensively for this team. They're too good and too disciplined in that way. But it might not go this well offensively again, because you have a rookie going almost triple-double and you have other guys chipping in efficiently on offense, and it still wasn't even close to enough.
Okay. So we'll get back into Barnes in a second, because you're right. Like, Barnes is the biggest ripple effect thing, and I'm not trying to diminish what he was doing, because in many ways, he was the most positive and the most negative story of the game. Like, if you're a Raptors fan and you're trying to take out, well, what is the, if you really believe that there was no pressure, quote unquote, in this series, then the way that Barnes looked to start that game has you feeling incredible about his future with this organization. That said, the defense to me is story 1A in terms of that's the Raptors' identity, is that the team is built around all these wings that can switch, all these players who can switch, a point guard who is going to make second All-NBA team that Blake and I say is the most underrated defensive player in the NBA, just from a discussion standpoint, right? In Fred VanVleet, because he is so underwhelming to look at, but every single game you watch him, it's just, wow, I can't believe he made this play. Wow, I can't believe he made that play. And they got thumped. Like, James Harden got basically whatever he wanted in that game. He operated that game pretty effortlessly. Like, I know that if you look at the field goal percentage, it's not that great, but he went to the line a bunch of times. He got to his spots. He picked them apart with his assists. He put other guys in advantageous positions. James Harden played great. Joel Embiid didn't need to be a massive force in this game, but he really was down low. You could really feel his presence on the offensive glass where they were really struggling to keep him off the boards with those second chances.
He was unbothered how I describe it, right?
Like, yes.
He knows what to – and he said after the game, or I can't remember if it was after the game or before the game, but basically, right. Like, he's played the Raptors so much the last couple years, mm-hmm. It's still hard to operate against, but he knows mm-hmm. what's coming. He knows those doubles and triples are coming. He knows it's going to be physical. And, yeah, he got the benefit of the doubt on a handful of calls, but it's Joel Embiid.
Sure.
Who's he not going to get the benefit of the doubt on calls against?
Same with Harden. Same with Harden. You can't get mad when those superstars get superstar calls because that's what happens in the NBA. But then Tobias Harris, who we have called, I think, Blake, quote, not a serious basketball player, end quote, is going off and hitting a ton of shots against you. And Max, he's hitting a lot of shots against you. And so, Blake, I guess what I'm going to ask you here is, all right, clearly there's got to be some degree of aberration because some of the shots Maxey was hitting were outrageous. Sure. Like, they really, really were some outrageous shot-making from him. But overall, like, the Raptors' defense never made Philly uncomfortable in just about any way in this game, and now you lose Barnes, so you lose that lineup that you were kind of hoping to have with the Precious, Boucher, Siakam, Barnes, where they go big and they're long and they're physical, but then they have two guys who can attack you with the ball as well. What did you just see from a defensive standpoint that, because if this doesn't work out, if this continues for the series to some degree like this, not 133 points a game, but I do believe that the real fear here in terms of changing the outlook on the series would be, well, if you're building a team around a lot of defense, that can be an issue if your team isn't completely playing good, is giving up this kind of a defensive performance.
Well, yeah, you can say the same about an offensive team. Is if you build a team around offense and you have a cold shooting night, it's going to look bad. But defense feels a little
like
more.
Like the Atlanta Hawks when Trae Young is only scoring 8 points,
yeah,
don't
when
look
he
like a
8%.
Yeah, exactly. They don't look good either.
Yeah, but defense does feel like something that it's a little more in your control than shooting variance, right? Like, that's an effort thing. That's mm-hmm. an attention to detail thing. And you go back and you watch a tape, you pick apart this game, and my rewatch Sunday morning was really frustrating because it wasn't just like, yeah, like, Maxey was awesome. Sure. The Raptors didn't do a lot of the Raptors-y things, and you can try to measure that with the turnovers and the offensive rebounding battle, but you could just watch. When James Harden has the ball over half court, the Raptors are ball watching, mm-hmm. and that is death against this team. It's one thing to ball watch against the Houston Rockets hardened teams where nobody else on the court is a threat to put the ball on the floor as you scramble back out to them. If you are ball watching and that ball swinging to Tyrese Maxey, who's become one of the mm-hmm. best shooter slashers in the league, or that ball swings to Tobias Harris, who, yes, I'm not the largest fan of, but is obviously capable of 26-6-6 and can mm-hmm. shoot the three or take you down into the post or whatever.
He can hit an open shot.
It's death against this team. They don't have a lot of depth, but when their main guys are on the court, they give no quarter. And this is the challenge with them, and it's why they've bet on, hey, having Harden and Embiid together isn't just about that we have a permanent free throw edge. It's that if you try to take those guys away, Maxey and Harris and Danny Green, who didn't hit a shot that game, and George Niang, and all those guys can make you pay. And that's what we saw in this one for the most part. Now, I don't know what your counter is for Tyrese Maxey, because my bet is that the Raptors would still prefer Maxey and Harris being the ones who have to beat them to Harden and Embiid. There's a lot they can clean up from you can't just stand there waiting for James Harden to drive and then pinching in and leaving Tobias Harris. Like, some of Tobias Harris's three-point attempts were so comically open, and you could see the play unfolding of exactly what Harden was trying to do. Yeah. And it's like, you have played James Harden way too much the last few years to still make that kind of mistake. And I think the Raptors would admit that. I think the film session yesterday probably picked a lot of that apart. So I don't know that the game plan will be all that different. I think you're going to be forced into a starting lineup change that you probably should have made anyway. Precious Achiuwa's got to start in this series.
Yep.
But yeah, in terms of defensive game plan, I expect it to be fairly similar.
I would just say that if I'm the Raptors, I want to make life incredibly uncomfortable for James Harden. And I want to put that in Philly's head. And I thought that the way that they played against him defensively was atrocious. And that's why when I heard that Fred VanVleet, the game plan was solid, I disagree. I think that if Maxey beats you for 38 points, that's fine. But what I cannot have is James Harden playing quarterback to that degree and getting comfortable with the assist making, and then also being able to all of a sudden just like take clean looks from three. James Harden was 4-7 from three. He was stepping into some of those shots. I want to see OG Anunoby, a guy that's on this team that we have trumpeted as one of the best players, defensive players in the league. I'll tell you something. You know who made guys look uncomfortable? Tybalt. Matisse Thybulle was flying around and really wreaking havoc defensively in that game. I want to feel the same thing from OG Anunoby. I want to feel the same thing if he's defending James Harden, that James Harden's life is miserable. I don't want to see him look comfortable like that again tonight. And if that means sometimes you're doubling him and trapping him and trying to get the ball out of his hands and getting it to move around, fine. But it was just way, way too comfortable for a player that has shown when he's uncomfortable in the postseason, he can collapse. So for him to get his feet set like that, I think that's a kind of a disaster for the Raptors. That was a miscalculation by the Raptors.
And some of it is execution, right? Like I mentioned, the Tobias Harris kickouts and Harden anticipating where the help was coming from and where the pinch points are on defense.
He's a brilliant
and Harden
player.
Still, yeah,
we really
exactly.
disrespected him.
Like, but you look
we should,
at
but we did.
You look at his earlier games against the Raptors as a 76er, and it's not a huge statistical difference, I realize, but there's a difference in feel between Harden has 17-8 with 6 turnovers, or Harden has 13 points, and yeah, he has 15 assists, but he also has 3 turnovers, and he doesn't get any threes off. That's what happened in his 2 earlier games. To quote-unquote take Harden out of the game and force Maxey to beat you, and he also has 22-14 still.
Yeah.
Well, then I think you didn't do, you know, you talk about pick your poison, but I don't think you did either in that case.
No,
you
all the poisons
like,
were picked.
Give me that poison. Let me double fist the poison.
The Raptors got drunk on poison.
they were
just drinking every drop of the poison in that game. Okay, so the defense has to be better. And if it's not, they're toast. And we'll talk in a little while about what we expect for this game. But yeah, Blake, you started it off with Scotty and Ailish. You said it, that it's hard to remove the Scotty equation. He was brilliant in that game. And I know that this sounds a little bit homerism, where but I genuinely believe this. Scotty was playing so well that despite the result, I couldn't help but sit there watching this game and go, oh my God. Like, for everything he has done this season, for all those flashes that Scotty Barnes has shown, this was the top of the top for Scotty Barnes. He looked completely unfazed by the moment. How many Toronto Raptors have we seen step onto a floor? How many Toronto Raptors? I don't need to put this as a Raptors thing. I can put this as a Toronto sports thing. How many Toronto sports athletes have we seen step into the big stage, into a massive moment, and crumble under the pressure? Everyone knows that this is a thing, that when defenses tighten up, the lights shine the brightest, players' games change. And not only did Scotty Barnes' game change, it was changed for the positive. We saw him look exactly like the regular season Scotty Barnes, that confidence. When the team was starting to struggle and they were going through those, he would try to take the ball and attack the basket. He was putting pressure on that defense. He was getting rebounds. He was flying around everywhere. He's communicating with teammates in a way where, like, he's talking, and I just loved it. He looked like a leader of this team. There were moments where I'm going, boy, Siakam, while Scotty Barnes was on the floor especially, looked like the number 2 in the offense compared to Scotty Barnes. losing him is catastrophic, but having that little moment of those three quarters of Scotty Barnes' dominance that way, or Scotty Barnes' elite play that way, has me feeling a little bit like, boy, it stinks, it's awful, but not... I can't feel that bad if that's what the Raptors have. Is a kid with that kind of confidence... I shouldn't be this surprised, I guess, considering the way that he's played all season long, but that fearlessness and the way that he played in that game... It took a lot of the sting out, even though obviously the injury was very, very sad.
It's too bad that the voting doesn't really account for what you can do in this postseason, because you're right, that tiny blip that we saw of Scotty, it could have been a completely different perspective coming in and being like, okay, the rookie was overwhelmed. He hasn't played in these type of big moments before, you know, didn't get a full season before this, but to see him, you know, have that rookie of the year performance in that tiny little segment that we saw, I think it's the biggest reason for hope. And even if it doesn't get a chance to show itself throughout the rest of the playoffs, I think you see that, you feel confident. I think the leadership point was like the biggest thing that I took away from it as well. For a young guy to come to that stage, to feel as confident as he did, to help drive the team when they're down and having a miserable performance, like, that is so promising. You're right, nobody really has done that as a rookie, to come into this stage to be unfazed. I think it's so promising. I really felt kind of confident in that perspective when you look at the Raptors moving forward. If he doesn't get an opportunity for the rest of the playoffs, that's a really tough call, but we don't really know. You know, there's a potential, maybe a tiny chance, a tiny little chance that we do see him again. But yeah, you're right. Like, Scotty Barnes having that moment is something that we can lean on next year. We can feel confident about. I mean, Pascal didn't have that moment, and that was something we talked about the whole year. Can he show up in playoffs? Clearly, we know that Scotty has a little bit of a different edge. So that's the biggest reason for hope for me, and the fact that the Raptors, even after the game, said, well, we've found ways this season. It hasn't been the easiest season for us with injuries, with the lineup. And if we can go in there and we can set the pace and we can set the tone first, that's their identity. We've talked about it all season long. It's like they were a team that nobody wanted to play. Didn't see that in game one.
They look like the team that you would want to play. The no defense team.
Completely the opposite of what we had said down the stretch here, how nobody wants to play the Raptors. You know, we didn't see that game one, but they're notoriously maybe not the game one team. So get that out of your system. You can't look back. You have to be the team that has a really great game two and continues that momentum. So I still find a little bit of hope. But obviously not the greatest taste in your mouth when you're going into game two, but maybe something that you rally behind too. Like, that was an awful performance. Let's just flush that and do the complete opposite.
Yeah. You have to do that part.
I'd rather rally behind a win, though. I love when people do that. They're like, now you can rally around the fact that you got the brakes beaten off you. It's like, I don't know if that's a great rally point. I prefer rallying off of win.
If they had played an amazing game and they still got smoked, what are you, like, you know, sometimes...
But I think that was Blake's point earlier, was that they did play really well offensively.
But there were some things that they can improve on. Offensively, for sure. But if you're circling the defensive game as the biggest thing to work on, that's one massive thing. But if they had a horrible offensive game, a horrible defensive game, they lost their best players, like, what are you saying to that team?
So, Ailish, you mentioned the you wish playoffs counted for Rookie of the Year. Well, here's the dirty secret about that. There's only one of the Rookie of the Year candidates who's in the playoffs that even has a chance to play like this, which says a lot about the season he's had. And, JD, to your point about the confidence, there was a play, I think it was in the second quarter, and the Raptors are in semi-transition, and Scotty's got early post position. Mm-hmm. And the ball comes to him, and he throws like a no-look one-handed touch pass out to OG on the far wing, and it wasn't a very good pass, but the Raptors were already down, and just like the confidence and the I'm so unfazed, I will throw this ridiculous Magic Johnson hot sauce and one pass was really encouraging to me. Now zoom out, and what does the rest of the series look like? Okay, yeah. It's really disappointing, because win or lose, the most important thing that we were going to take from this series is, did all the things that were encouraging this year translate in some way to the playoffs? Can you have confidence in what you're building here? And that, yes, it's a young team, one of the youngest in the entire NBA. Can you continue to build with that, with the confidence that the foundation's in place and you're in, like, what you're doing scales to playoffs and scales to good teams that are locked in. And Scotty Barnes is the biggest part of that. The most important question the Raptors are going to face this postseason is, what is Scotty Barnes now? Because
really, is that how you feel about that? Because I don't. That's not how I feel at all. Like, I feel like Pascal is far more important,
right,
to see how he and OG translate as older.
But
OG,
but Pascal and Fred. Right, but Pascal and Fred are older. And where I'm going with this is, if Scotty shows you that his timeline is he can contribute to playoff winning now, that sort of marries the two parallel timelines you've been operating on, where Pascal and Fred are over here at 28 and Scotty's back here at 20. If Scotty looks ready for prime time like this, you have a little more confidence that you can keep a foot in both lanes and win now while also looking ahead to winning in the Scotty Barnes era. So that's the big thing to me. I thought Siakam looked fine. I thought Fred, you know, looked a little rusty, but what are you going to do there? Scotty Barnes showing that his timeline is now is really important information for this team as they make some pretty big decisions this offseason, is the point I was trying to make there.
Yeah, and I agree with you in that sense, and we've talked about it all year long, right? The timeline shifter that Scotty Barnes has made time travel possible for the Raptors, where he has completely changed what are the expectations of the franchise moving forward a year from now. It's like we started this year with what lane are they going to pick, and they merged the two lanes. And that's the story of the Raptors season. The lanes got merged by Siakam's play and by Barnes's play. And to lesser degrees, even though Fred made the All-Star team and OG was expected to be the, you know, most improved player of the year, that those two guys were sort of around the fringes. To me now, this is an identity series for those three guys. Fred, OG, and Siakam. You are the guys in Toronto. And as great a story as Fred VanVleet has been, and as, you know, I really liked what I saw from Precious and Flashes. That one, he had a possession right before he scored that dunk on Embiid where he kind of was starting to attack him. And I went, why are we attacking Joel Embiid in isolation with Precious Chua? Why is this the game plan? And then the very next play, he shut me up by going baseline and throwing down a massive dunk on Joel Embiid right after. Precious and, to the much greater degree, Scotty Barnes, you're right, Blake, are the stories of, hey, how do you alter the timelines with younger players? But finding out what this core is made of, and I mean the older core, and it's weird to throw OG in there because he's not the same age as Fred and Siakam, but he's an established player. He's a fifth-season player. These three guys and how they respond tonight are going to be the story. Like, I'm not putting this all on Siakam's shoulders, but this was sort of a box score game where I went, yeah, you know, Siakam was good, and he had moments where he looked comfortable and he looked more like regular season Siakam, but I do want to see you take over a little bit more if you're an all-NBA player. And I felt there was the same kind of Siakam passive moments that we've come to see and that we talked about earlier this year, Blake, where we go, hey, you're having a good game, but sometimes as the best player, you got to go get the ball and you got to kind of be the fulcrum here and force breaks in the opposing defense. And there were too many possessions early on, especially where it was like he was just kind of, yeah, around and not coming to the ball, not creating more for his team. OG Anunoby, I need to see you play dominant defense. I can't have the Philadelphia 76ers score 133 points when these three core players are identity defense players, right? Would it shock you if any of those three ever made an all-defensive team in isolation? No, absolutely not. So buckle down and play some defense. Tonight, it has shifted. It is no longer about Scotty Barnes. I'm not writing off the Raptors because of what Ailish said. They have withstood injuries all season long. They have proven to be a resilient team. They have proven to be a well-coached team. But tonight, if these guys get smoked and they do not step up and they do not perform what we have expected from them all season long, I'm not going to say that because they were missing a rookie in Scotty Barnes, albeit an important rookie in Scotty Barnes, the rookie of the year in Scotty Barnes, that kind of excuses you from a mediocre performance if you're any of those three guys.
No, and you might be, I mean, they're going to be heavy dogs tonight, especially if Trent Young
They're seven and a half point underdogs.
Yeah, and that's going to swing once those even further, once those guys are ruled out officially, I think. Like the sum of Barnes, Trent, and Young is more than a three-point difference in the line from last game on top of the new information of, oh, yeah, Philly paced them. But, yes, you would hope that those three guys are supposed to be the drivers of winning, right? You're not supposed to rely on a rookie yet or a vet guy off the bench. Like, those aren't supposed to be the core pieces. So the even if the result is the same in terms of wins and losses, it better be a better game. It better feel a lot different.
Yeah, that's it to me is, okay, I'm not even it's tough to expect them to win tonight because those three players losing, it's not about so much losing Barnes. If you lose one guy in Barnes, you go, that's really tough, but you could still win. Now you lose two starters and Thad Young, who's the natural replacement there.
You have seven guys you trust.
Exactly.
And three of them are gone.
And now one of the guys, you know, who can shoot for you and Gary Trent, who can space the floor, is gone. I'm really not sure where you're replacing these guys, like what the move is here and who comes in and who necessarily does what. So, yes, this is going to be graded on a scale. I'm not expecting it. This is not a, hey, if Siakam, OG, and Fred don't go out there and win this basketball game, these guys are frauds. Obviously not. But there needs to be an uptick from them. There needs to be Philly doesn't score 133 points in this game. You're going to have to ugly this up a little bit, and you're going to have to prove that you can play in a tough physical playoff series with those three guys and have the three of them. Honestly, each of them is going to end up you got to have obviously 20 plus from all three, but how you get that 20 plus as well, I think is going to be the way that I look at this and go whether I feel optimistic about the rest of the series or whether you're basically saying, oh yeah, these guys are done.
Yeah, and is Philadelphia comfortable? If they're as comfortable as they were on Saturday, you're toast. Because part of the equation here and part of why some of the national voices believed in the Raptors' chances to pull off an upset was, oh, Philly feels combustible.
Yeah.
And if they steamroll you twice in a row and they get affirmed that everything that they've been thinking works in a playoff series, I don't know that that's combusting anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what, too. If you're the Raptors, and the way I'd be kind of selling this from a psyche standpoint is if you guys can steal this game from Philly, if they get a little overconfident because you're missing three key role players, two starters and a bench player, you take a game from them at home. And now there's a bunch of days in between with rest for Gary Trent Jr. to get right and maybe get Thad Young a little closer to where he needs to be. That would put a lot into that Philly team's head, right?
That's like a must win.
And no tie ball for the next two games after that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that is your, I guess, psychological edge. I don't know what that's worth when you step out on the floor and you're completely undermanned against a team that looked that good in game one. But that is the way that I'd be selling it. I don't know. How are they even replacing Gary Trent, though, in this game in terms of, like, what do you do from
Armani Brooks?
Well, no, but that's like when you're starting, I get putting Precious in because they should have always had Precious
in. They're
going
to start gigantic. I think they're going to start Precious and Kem Boucher? Burch, probably. No, I think they'd go Kem Burch, yeah. That's what they've done. That's what they did in the last two Philadelphia games in the regular season when they didn't have Fred and OG. They went Precious and Kem and just went supersized. It didn't work very well, but they sounded confident in it and talked about how they liked that look for size and physicality. I think they just like Boucher off the bench. And I mean, he fouled out in 15 minutes the other night. Yeah. You start him in that game and he's fouled out instantly.
I was going to say, if there was anybody who had a really tough game, it was Boucher, and he's a free agent. So I would say to Chris Boucher, he's probably going to get some money either way. But
Paul Reed cannot outplay you again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what was one of the most disappointing things about that game? We didn't touch on it, but it was like, The non-Embiid minutes in the first half, when Embiid sat and they were getting smoked by the no-names, I went, boy, this is a really tough look for the Raptors right here, where we went, well, they're the deeper team and they've got that didn't appear to be the case in that one. That was the sneaky toughest moment of the game that gets papered over by all of the other things that end up happening in the final result. So we don't have enough time here to kind of talk about Leafs, so we'll figure that out and we'll push that maybe into somewhere else, maybe even into the A-list. But let's take a break.
Seven. We can.
Yeah, we can. We can do it all over the place. All right. Yeah. Didn't feel as pressing. Yes. So the Raptors.
We can do it at 8. We'll get Stephen A. Smith's take on the Raptors or on the Leafs.
On the Leafs. You know what? I would almost guarantee you that Stephen A. Smith has something ready for the Leafs, yeah. Right? Guy basically learned the guy went from, I think, a complete non-UFC fan to being one of the faces of the broadcast when they first got the rights deal. So I'm guessing that he could pull something together for hockey now that ESPN has the deal. But before we do that, so it seems like all of us not really shifting off of the, no one's saying the series is done out of all any of us?
No. I mean, I'm saying it's close to done. Must win tonight. I think even if it's a close game, you have a little bit more confidence coming into the two home games, but I can't see that playing that same performance, going down 2-0 is gonna bode well.
I'm going to go back to 2016 Raptors playoff runs where I believe it was, so they played 20 games in that playoff run, and two of them were game sevens. And I think, if I remember right, it was six or seven times a Raptor said, we got to treat this like a game seven. They had seven game sevens out of in three series. Guess what quote you're dusting off for tonight? Got to treat it like a game seven.
It's weird because I don't expect them to win tonight because of all the reasons we outlined, missing those three players. But I also kind of go, you sort of need to win tonight because I just don't think that you're going to take the next four games, or you know, four of the next five games seems like a pretty outrageous proposition here.
Yeah. Well, you start running out of time, right? Like if you're going to pull off the upset, you got to steal one on the road at some point. And it's easier to do that in games one and two, ostensibly, than it is in game seven, certainly.
Correct. So let's take a break. Let's try to be a little bit more optimistic, a little bit more joyful with our joyful segment, which is the A-List. That's next. JD Blake and A-List, Sports F59 of the Fan.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. JD Blake and Ailish. We're going to have two A-lists kind of today. Stephen's A-List. He has that little segment as well. Stephen A. Smith. So don't get confused. This is my A-List today. I've been doing it all year long, but we get double spoiled because you have two of them. So we have some good news in the A-List. Let's just get right into it, Vic.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Finally, some positive news in the women's hockey world. There's been a lot of tension, to say the least, between the PWHPA and the PHF. But as Jeff Merrick, our guy, reported on the weekend, the PWHPA sounds like they have made very positive strides to creating a women's professional league, which would be ready to start in January. A six-team league, like an original six, is the type of mentality that they're going with, which would be both Canada and United States based, starts in January, goes till April with an expected 32 game schedule. So a real functioning league with not just one weekend a year games, but, you know, fully a schedule, travel schedule as well. The salaries, obviously one of the major points of contention as a women's hockey player myself, was that none of this is really like a feasible lifestyle, but it's looking like a 35 to 55 thousand salary, and that's U.S. dollars with benefits. So, complete step up for perspective. When I played professional hockey in the CWHL, my salary was $2,000 a year, which is not a feasible lifestyle. I basically had to pay to play by when you add all the expenses up, and $2,000 to $35,000 is a significant increase.
Yeah, so I have a couple thoughts on this. I think it's great. I think, you know, if we're looking at standard roster sizes and you know, 35,000 to 55,000 minimum, you know, that's already like a $4 or $5 million investment. So I think it's great that that amount of money is behind it already. I think it's a good signal to the intentions of the league that you look at that salary and, hey, that's on par with the G League. And I'm not saying that women's hockey is a minor league thing, but when we're looking for benchmarks to compare it against, it's at least, you know, on par with other domestic leagues that at least for now don't turn a profit, and it's looked at as more of a long-term investment. My concern here is that are you one of the best 120 player? Are we losing you to this new league?
No.
What if you show out on that line with Bourne and Kipper that you're playing on, or whatever
that is? I will not be attending any tryouts or drafts for this league, but I would love to be a part of the coverage and the momentum for women's hockey that's happening as a broadcaster. So do not worry, I will not be making a return to the ice, even though I dangled McDavid. I'm going to leave that in the background of my life. But it seems very exciting. I've talked to a lot of the players about it. I think that they feel very confident with the massive sponsor that will be announced, who's invested a lot of money into this league. There should be some more information probably about the rebranding of the league coming soon. Everybody feels really positive about this, especially the players. And that's been the major point of contention between both leagues, is that the players need to buy in. The players want to have to play in a league where they believe in the future of it. Obviously, this is the beginning, right? The goal is that 35 to 55 becomes 55 to 85 in a couple years. And I think that the major questions will be the draft and how they'll be doing this. And the conversations I've had with players is that, you know, a lot of them played in specific bubbles already. A lot of them are Montreal-based or Toronto-based or Calgary-based. So how do you create a league where you already have 20 Olympians living in Montreal? So how do you create a fair, like, starting ground where there's enough, evenness throughout the league? So it'll be interesting. I'm sure they're going to do a real draft for people coming out of college and people that were kind of just floating around for the last year or two. Very exciting. I'm very, very happy to be able to talk about this and feel confident in where the women's game is going. So a lot of hard work has gone behind the scenes in the PWHPA. They've been very steadfast on believing in their method and their motto and not wanting to partner and not thinking that the pathway's through the NHL. And I think there probably will be some team buy-in. Specific teams might buy into having like a sister team. So let's say the Toronto Maple Leafs are wanting to support a women's team. They might be able to say, hey, we'll help you with facilities, we'll help you with marketing, we'll buy into your specific team and put you under our, you know, umbrella. So I think that will be a massive, massive change for what the girls have been doing for the last 2 years, 3 years. And very, very excited. So congrats to the work that's been done. It's not over yet, but very big step forward.
So, sorry, just for you to clarify there, when you say that their goal is not to be partnered with the NHL, that's a departure for me, because my entire understanding was that the split between the two leagues was always based on the idea that the women in the PWPH, they felt as though they were not given a fair shake by not getting that real opportunity to partner with the NHL. And so I think you will see those sister teams if that is given the opportunity. But like,
I think the main decision
understanding
was
that it was
thought,
always holding out for that.
I think that the conversation always been like, let's just make a WNHL and we'll just be, you know, WNBA, WMHL. But I think that they've had so many of these conversations, and specifically Gary Bettman has said that he doesn't want to do anything if there's two leagues that exist. Well, it sounds like two leagues are going to still exist, and the PWHPA will just continue to do what they're doing. And it seems like they have their own belief system that it's not just going to be a partnership directly with the NHL as the overarching thing. Yeah. Over the last couple years with the PWHPA doing their Dream Gap tours, there's been a little bit of support from the league, but most of the support has been from the actual teams. Like, hey, we're the Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's help sponsor one of these weekends. And we're going to see that as an opportunity. A lot of times it hasn't been the NHL putting in that effort. So I'm sure that it would be great if the NHL were to say, okay, we'll buy in. But it seems like this time around, they're just going to believe in the smaller markets and teams rather than an entire partnership with the NHL. But that can change.
Yeah, that can change. And I'm thrilled that they're going to be announcing this big partner. I'm thrilled that people like yourself look at this as a massive step forward. I'm thrilled that the salary has made such a significant jump, because that is a consequential jump, and it doesn't look good on paper compared to obviously the NHL, but that's not how change happens. And sometimes I think that we forget that change happens slowly, and that's actually not that slow. That's a huge leap. And if you continue like that at a growth rate, even somewhere close to it, even in the stratosphere of that, that's really healthy for your league. What I will say though is that that league had, and I, what I mean that league, I mean the, what was it called before, the
PWHPA?
CWHL? No,
oh,
the,
yes,
the first one, the Canadian Women's Hockey CWHL. League, the one that you played in.
Yeah.
You you know this better than anyone, Ailish, but that league and that had a lot more issues than simply just a lack of sponsors.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. I can go on all day about it.
No, but that's actually what I was going to say to you is I hope that this isn't just, oh, well, now we've got a great sponsor and some of the money is figured out, and so this should be okay, because it is still a business and it's going to have to be sustainable. And so I am kind of curious to see. I personally have never been a big believer in the two-league operation. I've always just thought that the NHL does need to be, if their teams are going to show favor and that they're going to be highlighting some of these teams, I still think that that's really important. And if there's two leagues, that's not really going to happen. I don't like the idea of still splitting the talent, the regionality of some of it, the fact that it ends up being pitted against each other, which has never felt very good to me. Like, it's always felt uncomfortable when we've discussed the two leagues, especially the vitriol that has been there between the two sides at times. Are you more optimistic about things around the edges that are not just money related when it comes to this league?
Okay. So much different benefits is a humongous thing that the players were missing. No healthcare, no benefits, you know, like having to pay out of pocket for physio, for injuries. Like, that is a significant factor that the girls were searching for, and they will be receiving that. They're going to be able to be a part of creating their like CBA and their like their structure of their salaries. They are a part of it. They have their own little board that they have been able to voice their concerns. With the CWHL, you were just entering something that had already been established for you 10 years before with not a lot of flexibility. So the players are on that discussion now, and they get to say, hey, we need this, we want this, etc. I think the other thing that's different is, since they're creating this league, they are understanding that maybe the best player in the league could be making $100,000, $80,000, but they're going to lower their threshold to make it a bit more even for the players. Like, let's say they have this buy-in of X million dollars. Well, you think Poulin should make the same amount of money as me? No, but I think that they're willing to take a little bit of a cut from what they should be making to allow the league to function and allow that 35 range to be higher than 20. So I think that they are definitely buying in, and this being the building of a league, and maybe the goal is in 2 years to make way more as a top player, but there could be salary increases for being top scorer, for being MVP of the league. There could be bonuses that they could make. I just feel like they've had these discussions for the last 2 years, and they've been very, very honest about what they want, and they weren't willing to budge. That's why it's taken so long. So that, I think that's a very different perspective than before. So it's really positive in my mind.
And it's taken long relative to, you know, they haven't been on the ice, but I look at the WNBA, and that's existed.
That took long too.
It's existed since 1996.
And
it's
just
only
turning
the last
a profit.
Two CBAs ago, they were talking about, we have to get these players up to enough of a wage that Diana Taurasi doesn't have to sit out an entire WNBA season because her Russian team says, we want you to rest and we pay you four times as much as the WNBA team does. This last round of CBA, the minimum bumped from $42,000 to $61,000 US. Mm-hmm. So already you're looking at, for this potential league, when we account for the difference in roster size, the salary floors for the six teams in this league are already on par with the salary floors for WNBA teams. And again, the WNBA has existed for over 25 years with the tie into the NBA. So I think, you know, the holdout here and the belief in what would make a long-term sustainable, healthy league we're already seeing the payoff. Now we'll see how it works in practice. I have a lot of confidence that you're going to see that the audience is there if it's done right. But in pure economics and heading into a first round of collective bargaining or however they approach it, you know, they've taken the lessons from previous women's league. They've taken the lessons from the growth of the WNBA over the years. I think they're in a good spot. I think it really affirms the patience that they've had here and the self-belief in what they wanted. I think we're moving in the right direction here big time.
Yeah, certainly moving in a direction, which has been something that the fans have been waiting for. And any progress seems to be good progress. But yes, lots of time between now and January for some more information to come out. So I will definitely be talking about that when it does. But yes, big steps forward. Shout out to Jeff Barrick for being, you know, one of the first people on this story and to talk about it on Hockey Night Canada is really a great step for women's hockey to get that type of publicity and coverage. So it's been great. Very excited to see where they go. And I will not be returning to the ice, but... That's fine. I guess that's the only piece of A-list information we have because
one last tiny thing because you played us in with Girls by Beyonce. Can we just talk about how Diplo mailed in the beat to that song? Like he just took that right from a Major Lazer song 2 years later. And I know that's a great song, but come on, you get Diplo on a track. You at least expect an original concept that he just pulls. He's like, hey, Beyonce, sing over a Major Lazer song. Disappointing from him.
Only you would have. Caught that. I didn't know that that was a
beat.
That
was
something
song,
else.
Blake. Yeah, like, it's nice.
We
song.
Had 20 seconds left in the A-list. Look, JD, you hadn't been negative about anything in the A-list. It wasn't going to feel right if someone wasn't negative about
something. Yeah, that's right.
Let's take a break and let's come back and discuss the weekend from the other two Toronto sports teams, the Blue Jays and the Toronto Maple Leafs, just ripping off W's no matter who's in the lineup. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.